the need for Jewish skill when it came to a particular craft may have also allowed for the entry of Jews in Jerusalem. Jews perhaps could not stay or build a community, but they could come. And also, intriguingly, they could leave a record of the fact that they had come, leave a record of their own love for and loyalty to Jerusalem. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 132, Benjamin of Tudela and the Stones of the Holy Land. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. In the second half of the 12th century, a Sephardic Jew by the name of Benjamin of Tudela set out on a journey which took him across much of the known world. His record of his travels, written in Hebrew, but translated ultimately into several languages, is a fascinating source of insight about the state of Jewish life in various corners of the earth. Why did Benjamin choose to travel? A search for possible sources of trade or livelihood is certainly a possibility, but as Marcus Adler notes in his introduction to the critical version of Benjamin's record, we can also place this journey in the context of the historical turmoil occurring at the time, events that we have discussed in previous episodes. The First Crusade destroyed much of the Judaism of Germany, and persecution in southern Spain forced Jews such as the family of Maimonides to flee. Adler notes that Benjamin, in his text, seems particularly interested in Jewish communities that function in a more independent manner, and he suggests, therefore, that the famous traveler was seeking a site of safety for his brethren located around the world. Of course, as we have mentioned, one of the areas on earth where Judaism was particularly badly impacted during this period was in the Holy Land, and one of the locations visited by Benjamin was the land of Israel while it was under Crusader rule. And Benjamin's testimony gives us a picture of the sorry state of Judaism in Jerusalem and its environs at the time, but we can also find in his account more inspiring indications of the undying Jewish love for the Holy Land. Let us briefly summarize the political state of affairs. The victories attained by the First Crusade resulted in conquests far beyond the Holy Land itself. The regions under Crusader control were divided into several territories, with much of the Holy Land itself forming what was called the Kingdom of Jerusalem. As we have mentioned, the reign over Jerusalem by Baldwin I was followed by that of his cousin Baldwin II, who was succeeded by his daughter Melisende, who in turn was forced to give up her rulership to her son Baldwin III. Baldwin III died in 1162 and was in turn succeeded by his brother, King Almaric. And it was then, during the reign of Almaric, as Adler notes, that Benjamin of Tudela arrived in the land of Israel, apparently a bit after the arrival of Maimonides. We must allow Benjamin in this episode to speak for himself, so we will cite several passages from his work, noting themes that appear again and again. Here is his account of his arrival on sacred soil. Quote, "One day's journey brings one to Acre, the Acco of old, which is on the borders of Asher. It is the commencement of the land of Israel. Situated by the great sea, it possesses a large harbor for all the pilgrims who come to Jerusalem by ship. A stream runs in front of it called the Brook of Kedumim. About 200 Jews live there, at their head being Rabbi Zadok, Rabbi Japheth, and Rabbi Jonah. From there, it is three parsangs to Haifa, which is Haifa on the seaboard. And on the other side is Mount Carmel, at the foot of which there are many Jewish graves. On the mountain is the cave of Elijah, where the Christians have erected a structure called St. Elias," end quote. So we have 200 Jews in Acco, and note how Benjamin simultaneously gives the name assigned to different locations in his period, while also seeing it through the lens of the Bible and applying to it the name of the Bible, highlighting, therefore, how Jewish memory works and how the Bible connects Jews to the Holy Land. His journey in the book continues on to Caesarea, where he finds a Jewish community as well as a Samaritan one. And then he writes, quote, "Thence it is a half day's journey to Keiko, the Kela of Scripture. There are no Jews there. Thence it is half a day's journey to St. George, which is Lud, where there lives one Jew, who is a dyer," end quote. Benjamin, in other words, journeys to a location that he knows from the Bible but finds no Jews. Another location that he knows and finds only one Jew, whose profession is the dyeing of material. This profession seems to have been one in which Jews in the Holy Land achieved a certain expertise, a fact that will be important. Then there is Benjamin's description of the biblical regions of Gilboa and Givon. He journeys to a village near Gilboa and again reports, quote unquote, "There are no Jews." He journeys to Givon, telling us that its contemporary name is Mahomery Le Grand, and again tells us, quote, "It contains no Jews," end quote. This is a phrase that appears then more than once. And then he tells us From there it is 3 parsangs to Jerusalem, which is a small city, fortified by 3 walls, adding that it contains a dying house, for which the Jews pay a small rent annually to the king, on condition that besides the Jews, no other dyers be allowed in Jerusalem. End quote. Note again the reference to the profession of dying. This expertise seems to have gained Jews entry into Jerusalem, but how many Jews were there under King Almaric in the Crusader Kingdom? In one version of Tudela's account, we have this, quote, "There are about 200 Jews who dwell under the Tower of David in one corner of the city," end quote. This actually sounds like a lot. But Adler points out in his own critical version of the text that based on an earlier manuscript, this is likely a mistake, and an understandable one. In Hebrew, the letter Resh stands for 200, whereas the very similar letter Dalet means 4, a much more likely number. After all, as Adler points out, we have an account by a Rabbi Petachia who visited Jerusalem soon after Tudela, and when he got there, there was only 1 Jew left. Thus, it is likely that when Benjamin arrived, he found 4 Jews, perhaps, as others write, with their family. And soon after, it was down to 1. And then there is, in Benjamin's account, this fascinating passage. Quote, "Jerusalem has 4 gates, the gate of Abraham, the gate of David, the gate of Zion, and the gate of Gushbat, which is the gate of Jehoshaphat, facing our ancient temple, now called Templum Domini. Upon the site of the sanctuary, Omar ben al-Khattab erected an edifice with a very large and magnificent cupola, into which the Gentiles do not bring any image or effigy, but they merely come there to pray. In front of this place is the western wall, which is one of the walls of the Holy of Holies. This is called the Gate of Mercy, and thither come all the Jews to pray before the wall of the court of the temple." End quote. What we can deduce from this passage is that first, Jews, even under dire straits, would make an attempt to pray on the Temple Mount during this period. And second, that they prayed on the mount before a western wall, which was one remaining from the Second Temple, not the western wall below the Temple Mount, where Jews would later pray. Mayer Loewenberg interprets this passage as follows. He writes, quote, "Benjamin reported in his travelogue that all the Jews come to pray before the western wall that is in front of the Dome of the Rock. He noted that this is one of the walls remaining from what was once the Holy of Holies. The western wall that Benjamin described is not the present western wall, which is part of the retaining walls of the Temple Mount, and which did not become a site for Jewish prayer until the 16th century, but the ruins of the western wall of the temple building itself on the Temple Mount." And Loewenberg adds, "At the beginning of the 12th century, Archbishop William of Tyre wrote that no professing Jew remained in Jerusalem. 50 years later, Benjamin of Tudela counted 4 Jewish families who lived in the city. The order prohibiting Jews from living in Jerusalem may have been enforced less strictly in the latter years of the Crusader occupation, when there was need for certain skilled trades, such as dyers. Consequently, the order prohibiting Jews from ascending the Temple Mount may also have been relaxed." End quote. Thus, the need for Jewish skill when it came to a particular craft may have also allowed for the entry of Jews in Jerusalem. Jews perhaps could not stay or build a community, but they could come, and also, intriguingly, they could leave a record of the fact that they had come, leave a record of their own love for and loyalty to Jerusalem. Thus, Benjamin of Tudela also describes a mikveh, a ritual bath, from the Second Temple period. Quote, "There is also visible up to this day the pool used by the priests before offering their sacrifices, and the Jews coming thither write their names upon the wall." End quote. Thus, it seems that Jews cannot create a long-lasting presence in Jerusalem, but their presence in Jerusalem did not cease. Benjamin then describes journeying from Jerusalem to Bethlehem and describing what he calls, quote, "the pillar of Rachel's grave, which is made up of 11 stones corresponding with the number of the sons of Jacob. Upon it is a cupola resting on 4 columns, and all the Jews that pass by carve their names upon the stones of the pillar. At Bethlehem," he continues, "there are 2 Jewish dyers. End quote. Here too, then, there are Jews that are experts in this craft, but they number all of 2 people. That is the Jewish community of Bethlehem, of the city where David was born. But again, the Jews that do not have a community there, nevertheless, do come there and record that they were there. Their names are again inscribed in stone. Journeying to Hebron, Benjamin also found that there was no Jewish community. But it is clear that still, Jews come to the cave of the Machpelah, to the burial place of the ancestors of the people of Israel. He writes that, quote, "the custodians tell the pilgrims that these are the tombs of the patriarchs, for which information the pilgrims give them money. If a Jew comes, however, and gives a special reward, the custodian of the cave opens unto him a gate of iron, which was constructed by our forefathers, and then he is able to descend below by means of steps," end quote. Jews then came and paid for the privilege of communing with their ancestors in the burial place of their ancestors. And as Benjamin further tells us, it was not only the patriarchs and matriarchs interred in Hebron. Quote, one finds there are many casks filled with the bones of Israelites, as the members of the house of Israel were wont to bring the bones of their fathers thither and to deposit them there to this day. End quote. Thus he found in Hebron a sign of Jews who with loyalty and love journeyed to that place with the bodies of their loved ones, just as Joseph journeyed from Egypt with the body of his father Jacob, thereby joining themselves in a link of loyalty and love to their ancestors that have come before. Benjamin thus provides us with a picture of the Holy Land under the Crusader Kingdom, a land in which Jewish communities are almost gone, but in which the dedication to a land and a sacred city is made manifest in inscription on the stones of the Holy Land itself. The stones and jewels that were worn once by the high priest in the temple had the names of the tribes of Israel inscribed upon them. The Bible speaks of Avnei Zikaron, stones of memory that proclaim to God our connection to him. At the moment Benjamin of Tudela arrives in the land of Israel, those temple stones of the high priest are long gone. But in the 1160s CE, the seemingly simple stones of the Holy Land, inscribed with the names of Jewish visitors, suddenly become more precious than jewels. According to Isaiah, the eschatological era, the age of the redemption, will be one in which the streets of Jerusalem will be paved with Avnei Ekdach, precious gems. And that ultimately will come in the merit of that which came before, in the merit of the stones that proclaimed what for the land of Israel is perhaps the most precious of all, the undying love of the Jewish people. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.